Just over a year ago, Peterborough United footballer Bobby Copping went up for a routine header in training. He landed and his vision went. He'd suffered a mini seizure and off of the back of that incident spent 4 days recovering in hospital. The defender hoped it was a one-off incident and he fought his way back to full fitness. But in his comeback game, he went for a header in the warm-up and it happened again. At the age of 19, Bobby was forced to retire as a result. Unsurprisingly, that was an incredibly tough thing to deal with, having worked so hard up until that point in his career, only for it all to be turned upside down. With one header, it had all ended. Bobby takes us through those events in this episode of the podcast, as well as the incredible mental challenge that came after that sudden retirement. But he has also worked incredibly hard to move forward, and with the help of Peterborough United, he has plenty of roles within the club to keep him busy. He's also using his experiences as a force for good, and earlier this year launched the Bobby Copping Foundation, with the aim to become an independently funded organisation to help players, their families and staff in elite sport. He has also recently become an ambassador for our charity partners, the Minchish Foundation, as he tries to spread his message even further. Bobby, a warm welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for taking some time out to chat to us on the show today. Busy time, I imagine, but how is everything at the moment?
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Everything's good. Everything's good. Just getting used to all the new stuff I'm doing. But again, it's exciting and it's a progression from where I was about 5 months ago. So yeah, everything's good.
Exactly. Definitely a progression. And we've got, plenty of things to talk about. Some of those new projects are, will be mentioned throughout. There's your own foundation. There's stuff with the Minchish Foundation, of course, who are big friends with us. Long-time listeners of the podcast will obviously know that. But also your own personal story and what you've been through at the same time as well. For those who are perhaps unfamiliar or haven't read about your story before, do you want to just take us back to July last year? Because again, we're not really talking all that far back in terms of time span. And just tell us about, I suppose, that header and what happened off the back of it and how your life has, I suppose, ultimately changed since then.
Yeah, so I was a professional footballer for Peterborough United. So in July, it was pre-season, we'd just come back from the lockdown where I'd worked really hard. So when I came back, I'd make sure that I was first team ready. I think I put on 14 kilograms of muscle in the lockdown period, so that sort of shows the work I was putting in and how I wanted to come back and be ready. So in the second week of pre-season, I think it was, I went up for a normal header, just like I would every day in training, and I landed, and as soon as I landed, sort of my vision went, so I could see sort of 5% of my vision probably. I just thought, obviously at the time I was probably dehydrated, so I went into the physio room after, and that's when sort of the left side of my body started to go numb and things like that. I got rushed straight to hospital, and at that point they thought that I could be having a stroke or something like that, which obviously at 19 years old isn't the best thing that you want to be hearing. But after that, obviously they said I was all right to go. I think I was in hospital for 4 days or so, and I made a staggered return to training. It took me 5 months to get back fit, and then in November last year I was on my last sort of progression back to training, if you like. So it was the 90 minutes, my first 90 minutes back against Luton Town on the 23s, and in the warm-up to that game I've gone up for a header again and the same thing happened. So this time it was a lot worse, and I sort of again couldn't walk really this time. I got carried in and rushed straight to hospital in ambulance. And then it was sort of at that point, the doctors in the hospital said to stop this happening. The only real way is to stop playing football, which obviously isn't great and probably one of the toughest things I've ever had to deal with. But again, I just tough times, but luckily I've been able to get through it and I'm here now doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly. Like I say, having to face, you know, not one, but two of those incidents in quick succession. But I suppose having put in the work after the first one to try and get back and put so much effort for it to happen again, I don't want to say, did that make it worse? But was that just like another real hammer blow at that point?
Yeah, I think obviously after the initial work I'd put in the lockdown to come back, first team ready was obviously tough from the first injury, but I thought obviously it's an injury, I'll be all right. I'll get back fit and I'll go again. But then for it to happen again after spending 5 months and then return to trainings ain't easy. You're running and your lungs feel like they're going to fall out, which is obviously all part of it. But so that was then tough to be sort of laying in the hospital bed thinking, I know I'm out for at least another 5 months here. But obviously, unfortunately, it was out for the rest of my career, which is not great, but I just had to deal with it and sort of move on.
Did that sink in right from the start? Did you kind of know in the back of your mind before, I suppose, they'd officially said to you that, you know, it's probably best that you stop this?
Yeah, I think I was sitting in the hospital bed sort of thinking, like, am I going to have to retire? Because it sort of happened twice. And obviously, we later found out that sort of if it kept happening, then it could have obviously progressed and got worse each time. So instead of having 5% of my vision, it could have made me permanently blind and things like that, which is not something I'm going to risk. So obviously, it was tough. But yeah, at some points when I was in hospital, obviously for the first few days in the hospital, I didn't know where I was. I still couldn't see. I couldn't feel the left side of my body for probably 2 weeks. The numbness in left side of my body was still there. So that was obviously tough to deal with. But yeah, there was obviously that thing in the back of my mind to say, look, I might not be able to carry on. But also it was, I think I'll just come back. The type of person I am is I'll just bounce back from it. I'll be fine. Until obviously we then spoke to the specialist and couldn't really risk anything further.
Yeah, I think that taps into something that we've had with, say, quite a few athletes where, you know, you're kind of taught to control the controllable. So when something completely out of your control happens, that then affects your career, that can be really, really tough to deal with. And I imagine that's kind of a similar story for you, is that, you know, you put all the effort you can into being the best player that you can possibly be at that time, and then something completely out of your control happens. And I suppose you kind of feel a little bit lost after that, don't you?
Yeah, it was obviously, like I said, in all the talks and stuff I do for the charity, it was tough. And there's sort of, again, like you said, there's nothing I could do about it at all. So for me, it's now sort of spreading my experience to say to young and upcoming players that just be grateful. Be grateful for every sort of opportunity you have, because unfortunately I found out what it's like to lose your career overnight. Effectively, I went up for a header and could never play football again. So for me, it's now just educating the younger generation really that are coming through to say, look, you've got to be grateful and just enjoy every moment.
Exactly, some really positive messages that we'll pick apart a little bit later. First off, how are you now?
Yeah, good. I think mentally I'm good. I did have sort of a rough time after it happened, sort of dealing with it and some very like dark thoughts and things like that. But luckily with sort of my support network, I've been able to get through it. And with Peterborough, the club, they've been amazing. So mentally, I'm doing well at the moment, and I've been given so many opportunities that's probably helped a lot. Obviously, physically, there's still some issues there. Mentally, my memory. Sorry, I still have some problems with that. Obviously, after the incident, it was quite bad. was sort of struggling to remember what I'd eaten the night before or what I'd done the day before, and that was obviously quite worrying at the time. But for me now, it's sort of that's getting better, sort of not day by day, but do you know what I mean? It's slowly getting better, and actually that's a positive.
So, I suppose if you can see the progress, can't you, then that always makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And we talk about mental health with athletes so often on this show. We've had so many, like, you know, quite awe-inspiring mental stories from people over the years. And I suppose one thing that's often come out is that support network and having the club stand by you in the way they did. I imagine that's been a big thing in terms of your progression in that time as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely amazing. Like I said, I went through probably a 2-week period where I just didn't come out of the room, really. I ordered probably 3 takeaways a day. Curtains closed. I think I turned my phone off and didn't speak to anyone for about 2 weeks. Sort of just in the dark every day, just not doing anything. And sort of at that time, it's like there's no purpose. I had nothing to live for effectively, because I sort of just lost everything. But luckily, obviously, I have my girlfriend, which has sort of been my rock, and my family that's absolutely been amazing and just by me and pick me up, if you like. And obviously, the club offered me so many opportunities in terms of roles and new paths to go down. So that's sort of how I've been able to get through it. But again, not just the club and my family, but the whole football world. I think the reaction that it had was sort of overwhelming. I had messages from everywhere, all over the world, and also top people as well, that have obviously not just messaged me but also like raised money for my charity and stuff like that, which has been amazing.
Exactly. And that was going to be one of my follow-ups, was how your family were, I suppose, in all of it as well, because then, you know, you think of it from a parent's perspective and having to watch you go through that, sometimes I almost feel a little bit powerless and wanting to help in ways they can, but I suppose just being there, like you said, you're rocks throughout it all.
Yeah, to be honest, they struggled. We all did, because it's not just been me the whole way through. It's been a joint effort, in terms of I wouldn't be where I am without my mum, without my mum, my dad, and everyone else in my family. So for them, it was just as tough as it was for me. It's like a grieving process, because we put so much into it. So much work, so much effort, so much time, that obviously when it's just gone like that, it's tough to deal with. But again, sort of all together, we've got through it, and now we are where we are, and I'm now looking on to hopefully bigger and better things and progressing in other roles.
Definitely. And kind of coming on to that, because again, something that has cropped up a lot is kind of athlete identity, you know, how you see yourself. And it's something Alex Wallace of obviously Mintridge Foundation, who you know too, has spoken about herself before, when she was, you know, a hockey player, and she always saw herself as Alex the hockey player. But then obviously when that didn't pan out, she had to kind of reassess who she was, I suppose, in life. And I imagine, is that something that you've kind of worked towards yourself? Because before you were Bobby the footballer, but now you're Bobby something else now, charity, organiser, fundraiser, coaching, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was sort of very football, and that was in terms of being a player, and that was everything that I'd ever done and ever known. So that's obviously any young footballer is going to be the same. But obviously now I've been there, so I can sort of look back and again try to educate younger players coming through. And you can't just sort of have that one focus. If you know what I mean, you can't sort of be just looking at football, because you've got to have other interests and things like that. Because again, if it does all go pear-shaped, then you've got other things to fall back to. Well, not fall back to, but progress in different walk of life, which luckily I've been able to do.
Definitely. Working with Peterborough as well, just give us a little bit of an example, really, about some of the bits and pieces you've been getting to do for the club. Because I imagine keeping busy has maybe been a large part of getting you to where you are now.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got 4 roles at Peterborough now.
Only 4.
Yeah, only the four. So I am the under 14 assistant manager in the academy. So that's obviously my coaching side of things. I'm the women's operations manager. So sort of I've said I want to go down to coaching or the business side of things in football. So that's sort of my route in and my experience to Kane at the moment. I'm also the schools initiative person. So basically the club want me to go to schools and talk to students about Peterborough pretty much. And also I've just had a new role as well. I'm going to be the affiliations manager where Canadian clubs and American clubs come over. So basically I have to organise games for them and tickets to first team games and sort of just look after them and give them an experience of being a professional, which is it's obviously great for them. And again, more experience for me and again, will allow me to progress further.
Here's a big question. How do you think you've grown as a person in that time? Kind of doing all these different roles and going through what you've been through in the last year?
Yeah, massively. I think looking to now to where I probably was a year ago, I've progressed massively and evolved massively. Not just obviously in my roles, but as a person. I feel like obviously, like I said before, you have to be grateful for everything, which I've been taught that harshly. Obviously with my roles, I'm learning every single day. I'm learning on the job, if you like, which is obviously great for me, but also time management. So I've got four roles. I've got my charity, I've got studying to do as well. So time management for me is crucial. But also I think the work ethic that I was known for and sort of on the pitch has now sort of reflected off the pitch, really, because I'm doing all these things, but it's not like it's getting to a certain time of the day and I'm saying, oh, that's my time done, I'll go home now. Some days I'm still at the training ground at 10 p.m. at night, getting things done and just making sure I'm progressing and getting everything that's required of me done, if you like. So again, it's great to know that my work ethic wasn't just being a football player. It's throughout life and throughout everything that I do.
Yeah, it's a transferable skill, isn't it? You know, you work hard and opportunities come your way.
This podcast is a member of The Bear, internet radio and podcast network. Find more great podcasts at thebear.live.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn. Let's talk about your foundation rather a little bit, and the Bobby Copping Foundation. And I always think it's brilliant when people are able to kind of turn those negative experiences for whatever reason into, you know, making it a force for positive change and helping people. So massive credit to you for setting it up in the first place and kind of having that as one of your primary focuses. Just tell us a little bit about what its aim is and I suppose what you want it to ultimately be and the message it's trying to spread.
Yeah, so sort of it's pretty much maybe a month after I retired. Me and one of my colleagues, Kaylee Stent, sort of sat down and said, I sort of said, I want to do something in terms of charity. To be honest, at the start, I'd never envisioned that 6 months down the line, I'd own my own charity. But yeah, so we just sort of sat down and said, look, we want to do something to help people because Kaylee obviously has been through a lot of stuff in her personal life. And I've obviously been through my stuff in my career. So we sort of wanted to bring them two experiences together. So I've obviously got the main experience in the football world and she's obviously got it in the personal life. So we wanted to come together. So literally that day we got an email from someone called Samantha Lakin, who does a lot of business work and things. So she actually emailed the club, emailed Kaylee saying just to let Bobby know that if he needs anything, then I want to help him as best I can. So we actually went to her and said, look, well, we've actually just had this idea. So if you'd be able to help him anyway, that'd be great. So Samantha and her husband, Martin, We all sort of had a big meeting and put all our ideas together, and 6 months later, here we are. We're literally weeks away from being a registered charity. Literally just waiting for that to come back now, which is amazing. We've just taken on a head of marketing, which obviously shows the sort of progressions we're making. I think we've done now various talks up and down the country. I literally just done one with Stoke City, which is amazing to do it with that sort of level of club. But also, it's not for me, it's not just doing it to the big clubs and the professional clubs. I've also done it to Stamford College. I've done Kettering Town. So it's, for me, it's everyone sort of in the sporting world that needs the advice and the education and the inspiration that I feel I can obviously offer from what I've been through. So I think sort of the next steps for me and for the foundation is to start taking on ambassadors. So obviously I'm doing my talks in the football world, but we want to spread the message further. So I want ambassadors in tennis, in cricket, in rugby, that can go and do talks to all them sorts of clubs, and spread their knowledge, spread their education and all that sort of stuff, what I'm doing in the football world. So obviously it takes time and stuff like that, but I'm sure that hopefully by the end of this year, we can sort of have ambassadors going around talking in different sports, which again will be amazing. And I think the overall goal is definitely to sort of be known nationally for now anyway, and then hopefully branch out sort of into Europe, if you like. I like to think already I am, well, the foundation is known a little bit in different countries from just individuals, but again, that's sort of the end goal, is to then provide counselling and stuff like that, and people's obviously donations are vital to allowing us to have the ambassadors and have the counselling and things that we can provide people.
Yeah, I mean, to see how much it's grown already in what, the space of 6 months. Yeah. I mean, the signs are definitely good, and like I say, a really positive message to spread around the world and do some good. Do we, kind of us as fans and us as the public, still kind of consider athletes as robots sometimes? Because I suppose you look at the whole debate around what happened with Simone Biles in the Olympics and Ben Stokes at the moment as well, and whether, you know, that we're finally starting to recognise athletes' well-being at the same time as everything else.
Yeah, I think, like you've seen with the athletes, that they're not robots. And you find the higher you go up the levels in professional sport, that the pressure is unreal. The pressure on these guys is crazy, and it's obviously hard, probably sometimes, for the human body to compute it, if you like, because there's so much pressure. But obviously, some people can thrive off it and deal with it, and obviously others struggle, and that's obviously no fault of their own. It is what it is, but
everyone's different, aren't they?
Exactly. And obviously it's when that does happen, like we've seen with Simone Biles at the Olympics, that it's all about the people around her rallying around her and helping her and giving her encouragement, and not these people coming out and saying she's all these sorts of silly things that we won't go into. But but yeah, again, like I say, they're not robots, and that's why eventually if there is pressure, they will break down. So again, that's what we're here for, really. That's what the charity is sort of made for, is not just obviously for players and sports people, for their support, but also, like we say with the foundation, it's for parents and staff as well. So that sort of whole collective bubble that goes into the sports person, that's what the foundation is for, to support all of them. And yeah, so we like to think that so far we're doing a good job, and I've had crazy messages from people sort of saying, look, I heard your story. And I had one lad that contacted me and said that he just lost his dad, and he was going to a golf tournament, and he asked for some advice. So I've sort of said to him, look, you go and smash it, make your dad proud, et cetera, et cetera. If you need any support, then contact the foundation, whatever. And I think he messaged me a week later saying he won the tournament. And so it's little things like that, that's what we do it for. And when you get little bits like that, and it's amazing to see and hear, and I'm still actually in contact with him, and Obviously, if when he needs any advice, he comes to me, and I just give the best I can.
Perfect example there of why things like that are so valuable, isn't it? How are you with the pressure of trying to be a pro anyway? Because I suppose there's the pressure you put on yourself at the same time, and try not to be your own worst enemy, I imagine, which can be quite a difficult thing when you're trying to break into elite sport.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing you have to get right, is the pressures. Like I said, not when you go away from the training ground, you need to have other things, whether it's golf or whatever. You need to have other things. Otherwise, you're just thinking about football all day long, and you'll put too much pressure on yourself and eventually break down. But yeah, the pressures, obviously, it's tough because you've got so many people that you want to impress and make proud of you, if you like, and you put so many years into it that you just want to do everything you can to get there. So obviously then the pressure of you need a new contract, or you want to progress to a higher club or anything like that. There's so many little bits that can obviously put pressure on you. But for me personally, I think I thrived off it, really. I think the bigger games and the bigger pressure games I loved and I played best in, I feel, because at the end of the day, that's a big thing in professional sport, is playing in front of crowds and things like that, and entertaining, if you like. So for me, it was brilliant to obviously make my professional debut and stuff like that. So yeah, personally for me, I feel like it was something that I thrived off. But obviously before a game, you can feel it. Anyone that says they don't get nervous before big games is lying. Obviously you feel it. But obviously for me, it was when I took that first touch, I was then fine, and I'd sort of block out anything that was outside and I'd play my game.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, everyone's different, aren't they? And deal with it in different ways. And one thing, I think you've been asked questions about this before as well, because inevitably I imagine a discussion goes on to heading, considering what you've been through. And I even remember this discussion ongoing up when I was living in Scotland and just doing, you know, trainee reporting when I was up at university, and that being like one of the big debates about whether kids should be using foam balls and things like that. Do you kind of get brought into that debate and discussion kind of naturally now because of what's happened to you? And have you given much thought as to where we should be in terms of training up youngsters with regards to heading and whatever the associated risks might be? Because there's still obviously a lot of uncertainty around the amount of research there is at the moment.
Yeah, I think, like you say, I think every interview I do, I probably get asked about it, except if before they've asked if they can ask about it, and I'll sort of say, well, I don't really want to talk about that, because obviously I don't feel personally that I can comment on it, really, because I'm not a scientist. I haven't done the research, so personally I don't know if this affects this and that sort of stuff. Do you know what I mean? So it's tough for me to obviously say, oh, I know I've had a head injury, but I don't know if directly that was caused from constantly hitting the ball at a young age, or it might have been, but it might not have been. So I don't really want to comment and say this can't happen, if, again, I'm not a scientist, so I haven't done the research. But obviously common sense tells you that not smacking someone against your head at a young age is probably going to help. But obviously, again, like I said, it's a tough one, and there's a lot more research that needs to go into it before obviously any big decisions are made.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's pretty much the wide context, isn't it? So it just needs to be a whole lot more digging into the stats and the science behind it. Let's talk Mintridge as well, because obviously we've alluded to it a couple of times, and obviously we're massive fans of the organisation. We believe that they do really, really important work out there. And now you're an ambassador for them. And what, a few months back? But I mean, how has that been, getting to kind of join the Mintridge team, the Mintridge family, and I suppose the possibility of finally getting to do some of the things that you're evidently passionate about doing through your charity, but being able to reach out to more people and more kids and spread that message that you believe in so much?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like anyone will tell you, or like I'll always say about myself, I sort of just want to help people, use my experiences to help others. And I have a little saying of, if you can't help others, what's the point? I generally believe in that, because for me, there's no joy in being selfish and things like that. So helping others is definitely something that I thrive off and want to do a lot. So obviously being part of the Mintras Foundation is amazing. Alex and the team there do an amazing job in what they do and what they strive to do. So for me to say that I'm an ambassador of them is incredible. And again, like you say, because of COVID and things like that, I haven't been able to do too much work for them and go and talk to students and deliver sessions for them. But hoping that obviously as things sort of ease, that I'll be able to link up with Alex and the team and start spreading the message for them as well. Because obviously it's not just about me and my foundation, it's about every other charity. So that was obviously a little, I don't know if you saw, but I did in March, I saw that a statistic that 18 people roughly a day commit suicide. So I decided at that point I wanted to do something not for my own charity but for someone else's. So I ran 18k a day for Mind for 31 days straight, which ended up at 558 kilometers, about 380 miles. Yeah, my legs were falling off. So that's sort of just, do you know what I mean? That's the sort of stuff I like to do is just help others. And yeah, but like I say, the Mintras Foundation is brilliant. And like you said yourself, they're doing amazing work. And there needs to be more people in the world like that, because at the end of the day, if, like I said, if you can't help others, what's the point?
Yeah, a perfect mantra to live by as well. And with running stats like that, it won't be long before Alex is asking you to do a marathon, a half marathon for the Mintras Foundation.
I said I ain't ever running again after that.
give it time. She managed to convince me to do a half marathon for the first time. So she's very persuasive. I guess again, we're kind of talking about some big topics, but it ties into how important things like your foundation is and things like the Mintras Foundation is, about how sport can be this tool for good and this tool for helping people through dark times, like you say, linking it back to Mind as well. And, you know, personally speaking, it's something I found during this whole last year and a half of the pandemic, that the moment I was able to get back to sport, things were suddenly a lot better, all of a sudden going about your daily life. So, I mean, from your experiences, can you sum up how important sport is, football is, to, I suppose, to kids, but also to people, just in terms of having that thing away from the stresses of life?
Yeah, definitely. It's vital, isn't it? I think, like, obviously the science behind it is that when you exercise and play sport, then obviously you release certain hormones that make you happy. And that's sort of the science behind it, obviously. But the other elements, socially, if you like, of playing with your mates and having a competition with your brother or something like that, it's enjoyable things that you need as humans to like say get away from the other stresses that you might have going on, and it's a little escape. So I don't know, if you really enjoy golf, going to the driving range for an hour might be a great escape for you to switch off from other things that's happening in life. So for me, yeah, definitely it's vital. And if you need something, like for me, if you need something to take your mind off things in life, then trying out a new sport might be the solution. But yeah, definitely sport is an amazing thing. And yeah,
brilliant. Yeah, wholeheartedly back that, because like I say, it's one of those big messages that we've pushed relentlessly on this podcast. And we've got to like sport to do a podcast about it anyway, but the point still stands. It's I don't want wonders for us anyway, and we can't claim to be anywhere near elite athletes. In terms of yourself and kind of your future, do you see yourself going down a certain path, whether it is the business side or the football side, or is it still kind of seeing what falls into your way or your path at the moment?
Yeah, so I think obviously a lot of everything is opportunity wise, but I've sort of said to myself now that I've got two real routes that I want to go down. So I either want to go down the coaching side and be a manager, or I want to go down the business side in sport and be a technical director, sporting director, that sort of thing. So obviously doing my coaching at the moment with Peterborough is obviously, and I'm starting my UEFA B next month as well, coaching license. So that's obviously sort of helping me in the coaching managing direction. And then obviously I'm the operations manager for the women's side, and also starting a master's in football business management, which is obviously gearing me towards the sporting director business side of things. So I think in about a year and a half time, I can sort of look at it when I've got the experience of coaching, I've got the experience of the operation stuff. I've got my education, I've got my UEFA B, I've got my master's. I can sit down and think like, look, what opportunities have I got? What experience have I got? What do I enjoy the most? And then I can sort of crack on from there and really pick a path that I want to go down.
Pretty much ticked every single box there, haven't you? Could be director, manager, all in one if you wanted to. Always be safe because you'd never have to sack yourself. Thank you so much, Bobby, for that. I think there's so many important messages from all of that, you know, whether it's the stuff that we talked about with regards to your foundation, but also just being able to bounce back from something as serious as you went through. And like I say, being able to turn that into a force for good and try and help people who may be struggling with whatever it is themselves. And trying to make the world a better place, we will always wholeheartedly back that. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of that. And like I say, in terms of what you've got going on in the future, there's plenty going on, but I'm sure it'll be suitably rewarding, and no doubt that there's a big future for you in football regardless. Thank you so much. We'll put some links to your foundation in the show notes of this episode, so any listeners who want to go see a little bit more, read a little bit more, the information will be there as well. But thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Brilliant. Thank you for having me. Like I said, really, really appreciate it. And again, for anyone watching, if you ever struggling or need anything or whatever, get in contact with me, get in contact with the foundation, and we'll definitely want to help you.
Thank you so much to Bobby for taking the time to talk to us on this edition of Sportspiel. We always appreciate it every time an athlete gives us some time to have a chat with us. So many important messages there on that episode, and we really hope people can take something away from that. As mentioned, you can find links to Bobby's foundation and also the Mintridge Foundation in the show notes of this episode. Some final messages from us. If you enjoyed the podcast, please spread the word far and wide, as it's how we can grow. And you can find us on social media on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. All of our social handles are at SportsBuildPod. That's where you can keep an eye on everything that we're up to. As word as well for our radio partners, The Bear, you can catch us every Monday night on the online radio station. We're on at 10 p.m. and there's a whole host of brilliant shows and other podcasts there too. You can find out more at thebear.live. That is it for us on this episode, everybody. Your support is always appreciated, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.